This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. Clearly it is Friday because Peter's showing me pictures of new dinosaur species being found on the Isle of Wight. If you're interested in that, you can follow up on it. But it is Friday the 16th of June, 2023. And this will be a listener's edition, only in part. We're going to look at the results of the survey and talk about what we're going to talk about next week on those. I think some interesting results, what Saxo Market Call listeners think of the current market status, which is really looking like an incipient bubble or an active bubble here, Peter. I think we can argue quite forcibly that it is. Question is, how long can this extend? A week, a month, a day? I don't know. But yesterday extending once again, and that despite an ECB, although the Bank of Japan overnight with its non-movement, I think is a key sort of feeder of global liquidity, staying unmoved here. And we have this, well, as I put in the headline there, hooray for worse jobless claims, because what does it do? It helps the long end stay very orderly. It doesn't matter if the Fed does a hawkish hold. As long as those long yields come in lower, we can continue this upside here.
Yeah, I think that there's nothing in the macro indicators that are warranting or suggesting that we should accelerate like this. So it is purely driven by expectations of what AI can deliver to the economy. And I think McKinsey didn't really help on containing the fever and speculative optimism here, because they came out with a splash report. I don't know how much of it is PR. Sometimes I'm wondering how do they pull out these estimates for productivity gains, etc. I mean, and who's writing this report, and how do you get to these numbers? But in any case, they were very, very optimistic.
What was that headline number? Some trillions.
Trillions, adding a couple of trillions to the global economy per year, and the productivity gain figures were pretty. I think it was 0.6%.
I don't know if it was that report or another one I saw on Bloomberg, but it was an interesting take on this AI, in that they showed your education level and the potential for your type of job to be sort of replaced by technology based on your education level, based on your skill level. And without AI, it was still very high and not changed that much by AI. So if you're an unskilled or lower skilled labor, the AI doesn't really add incrementally that much to it. But then it was, the interesting thing was up in the higher education levels, that pre-AI, there wasn't that big of an opportunity for replacement via technology, but with AI, there is. So it's really interesting, I think, the longer term, to see how this AI drives replacement at those higher echelons and higher income levels and higher education levels, and drives an inequality from a different angle.
It's a super interesting topic. I've been thinking about it just philosophically, John, and I do think actually that the education sector has an enormous potential with AI technology. There is definitely a scope for much more individualized education alongside a more classic group teaching from an experienced teacher, but more individual sessions with an AI system that is calibrated constantly to the individual. I think there is definitely a scope for that. But there is a lot of things, you know, back and forth, and I think it's very, very difficult to predict where these productivity gains will be. I mean, you see these numbers on Twitter all the time. You know, code programmers are saying, "Oh, I've become 5x or 10x more productive," and I'm like, "Okay, if they're 10x more productive, given we have already had 6 months with these AI systems, I mean, I should already now see in Saxo that our trading platforms and, you know, our systems would be greatly updated and expanded at a rapid clip." But we're just not seeing that. But in any case, John, it is the AI that is fueling this, because not even the macro news yesterday that China maybe wants to do more stimulus, because if China's stimulating, it's an export economy, that it's a very closed circuit. So when they do fiscal expansion, it doesn't lift the global economy's growth rate to the same extent. Yeah, I know you're shaking your hand a little bit, but it's not. It doesn't have the same sensitivity, I think, or loading into the global economy as if the U.S. did a big stimulus.
Well, that's for sure, yeah. All right, so we have as well yesterday the ECB waxing far more hawkish than the market was expecting, and than I was expecting, really, with their pretty firm statement. But as well, it was really the projections that they put into the latest refresh here, and I've got these on slide 3. So these projections, staff economic projections for now, or the June meeting here versus March. And you can see some of these and why the market responded as it did. As you can see, the euro stronger, of course, and the two-year Schatz yield ripping some 12, at times 15 plus basis points higher yesterday. So look at that, just the top line inflation is not such a news generator, but all those core levels revised significantly higher for this year. So 6.4% for the excluding energy and 5.1% for the broader core versus 5.1 now versus 4.6. And then importantly for 2024, that big increase to 3.0 from 2.5 and even bothering to notch the 2025 projection a little bit higher suggests that they're taking this inflation situation more seriously, adding a lot of stern rhetoric on the wages side of things. And you can see that in the unit labor cost, that revision higher to 5.6% in the wage growth or the unit labor cost growth this year versus only 5.1 in the prior set. So just it got more teeth, this set of projections, and it has the market adjusting higher where it thinks the ECB is going from here.
Yeah, my two cents on it is that what we're seeing here in this table on slide three is an extension of this framework from econometrics. I've been banging on this since the pandemic hit, that these staff projections are clearly, these mean reverting econometric models. So 2.3 on the core inflation by 2025. So you have a current inflation level that is beyond the historical average, and then you have a decay from that point down to the average, and that is basically what it's showing. And I think it's a colossal failure of these economic models. It's very clear that the ECB and these staff projections, I wonder how much of that they actually believe it themselves when they discuss, because these numbers here, John, they don't correlate with what Christine Lagarde said in New York not long ago in her speech about fragmented world. These numbers are just pulled out of a model. They don't reflect what she said in that presentation, because what she was saying is that in a fragmenting world, we'll have an inflation problem, and the green transformation is part of that engine that will drive higher inflation and also the reconfiguration of global supply chains. So I wonder how much they actually look at this themselves, but it's almost like they feel compelled to provide them, because that's what we have always done.
Yeah. And then in your space, Ola, something like natural gas in Europe, and you still look at something like the German 1 year forward on power, and it's still something like 3x of what it was, let's call the middle of the range of what it was pre-Ukraine war, pre-pandemic. So these prices are potentially getting permanently reset higher, and that's going to take years to absorb.
Absolutely, and you are right, and we've just seen recently that the market has bounced 50% so far this month. It's just up of quite significantly, and part of the bounce is simply that we reached a level that was so low that competition from Asia just became too big, and it could indicate there is a flaw under the market, and we're seeing winter prices trading back above 50 euros. We're finding a flaw which obviously has to be higher than where it was before, because LNG will always be more expensive than pipeline gas.
Yeah, certainly. And we'll get back to the commodity performance this month, which has been quite spectacular. I just want to wrap the FX space and the reaction here, because it's pretty extreme. We're seeing a big extension weaker in the yen overnight. Bank of Japan completely standing pat, not indicating anything in the guidance that they're ready to shift on policy. But there are considerable thoughts that the July meeting could bring a surprise move. I think it does make sense to say that, look, they're either going to do nothing or it's going to be sort of a binary event that causes quite a shock, because they don't want to flag anything before they make the actual move. And one reason to expect July to more likely provide something is that they will bring their latest set of forecasts on the economy. We also get a look at the CPI next week. So that July meeting could shape up, I think, optionality-wise for a possible move. I'm not saying they're going to, but it's more likely in July than it would have been at this month.
How do you explain the difference in your trend reading there between the Australian dollar and the Chinese offshore currency? Why that difference? Wouldn't that typically be more correlated?
You would think so, but what's happening is that China is moving in the direction of easing.
Okay.
And that easing is seeing the renminbi weaker, because the trend is towards tightening everywhere else. And part of their stimulus can be a weaker currency in terms of that raises the amount of when you have foreign revenues coming in, that those amounts are larger. And then on the Australian side, you had the hawkish shift in the RBA, and you have some key moves in key commodities in anticipation of that Chinese easing then helping to drive higher commodity prices. And this whole global strong sentiment here is a strong Aussie driver as well. I suspect some of that minus on the Japanese yen as well helping to drive the Aussie. A lot of carry trading going on, because you have that Bank of Japan standing pat, and everywhere else the yields are continuing to rise here a bit. So It's a network effects of a few things, I would argue. But you see that Eurien extension, just wild extension with the hawkish ECB, the dovish Bank of Japan. But I think also the Bank of Japan is part of what's driving this. It's the global liquidity and the bubble-like behavior in some of the corners of risk sentiment around the world. All right, let's get back to the commodity performance this month, as I flagged there, Ole, and you've put up a chart there on slide 5. It's quite a turnaround. Obviously, the weaker dollar here must be helping quite a bit at the margin.
Absolutely. The dollar is down, around 2% so far this month on a broad basis, and that is adding some support back into the market. But you already mentioned some of it, but there's no doubt that the markets right now is looking ahead to events that could justify some of the movements we've seen already, especially in China, where the signs of additional stimulus has really been giving quite a big boost to the industrial metal sector this month. The energy is also recovering, courtesy also of that production cut we had from OPEC early in the month. So generally we're heading for strong months, but the one obviously we should probably worry about quite a bit in the short term is the grain sector. We're up more than 10% this month. It has come. It has risen from a relatively low level, but the data we're getting now from across the Northern Hemisphere regarding the outlook for production and the drought that currently is impacting the fields across the Northern Hemisphere, that's something that we have to worry about. So also just mention that the jump we've seen so far does not include the very, very strong gains we've seen in gas in Europe and iron ore as well. They're both not part of that Bloomberg Commodity Index. So the grain sector potentially could continue higher. The energy sector, industrial metal sector, they most certainly need some additional news out of China in order to justify the move we're seeing here.
And then on the metals front, a big turnaround there in gold after it was teasing some key levels, and copper still above that key resistance level.
Indeed. I think we can safe to say that we've seen a breakout in copper. We're still in a downtrend, as you can see, but we've taken out some key levels, and again, some of that hinges on the outlook for China. I think it's just worth mentioning as well that the demand and the focus on copper from the mining companies is just quite elevated. We just recently or yesterday saw news that one of the big Canadian pure copper mines had been approached by Barrick for an informal discussion about a takeover. It was rebuffed, but that company stock, First Quantum, was up 10% yesterday. So it just highlights the appetite. And finally, just on gold, we are range bound, but I think a little bit of confidence coming back into the market after we managed to find support below that 1935 level.
All right, and on stocks to watch, we talked about it yesterday, the Adobe earnings after hours, Peter. I was a little bit surprised that had a very strong session yesterday, and it was even tacking on a little bit more as far as I could tell after the close. It looks like the profitability, expected profitability looking very good year forward, but the revenue was basically in line with estimates. So I'm a bit surprised, when it seems like you almost need to blast everything to the upside to deserve even further extension when it's already rallied so much. But that didn't seem to be the case yesterday.
No, expectations were pretty high going into the earnings release, a 43% increase in the share price. And I think the fact that they just could deliver against the expectation or even exceed the expectations for the quarter we left, I think that was accepted by the market. And then they raised the outlook, not so much on the revenue, as you said, that was pretty much in line with the estimates, but it was the earnings side. And I think it was some of those statements that came in the press release about what they're seeing in terms of demand optimism and the receive. They have the positive receipt they've got from their customers on these new generative AI features. I think that was really what excited market and said, okay, maybe there is actually a growing potential upside risk to their earnings. So that's why the shares were up 2%. So and then the other story is Micron. They're getting very close, according to sources, to commit $1 billion for a new chip packaging factory in India. I think, again, another sign that investments will increasingly flow to to India because of the de-risking of China. So I will regularly put up this chart I made where we compared the Chinese equity market against some other equity markets that are benefiting from the shift in global supply chains.
All right, earnings to watch. We have for next week not a whole lot of names there as we're in sort of a dry spell here.
No, the big name is on Tuesday, FedEx, global logistics firm, getting a new update on the outlook and what they're seeing in the global logistics markets. That's really it.
All right, and I'll preview the macro calendar at the end of this call. Right now, I want to get to our Saxo Market Call listener survey and display the results for you. So we have it starting on slide 9 here. Our first question is, and we were curious to hear from our listeners, where this their view on this current U.S. equity market. And the possible answers were, A, it's in denial. This is a melt-up that can't hold. About half, slightly over half agreeing. I think maybe we have some selection bias because people listen to this podcast.
I was about to say.
Yeah, we're perhaps not the most perma-bullish crowd, but we're not perma-bears either. We're trying always to have the sentiment we feel is appropriate. But I think that was an interesting response nonetheless. And then there was an answer, it's ready to continue higher for a while. What's the worry? 21%, and then likely to trade sideways with indifferent results over the coming few months. The more sort of staid approach was at 28%. So a slightly bearish crowd. So if you want to be contrarian, I guess you would say it's going to continue higher for a while. And then somewhat of a contrast here, I think, less bearish on the AI theme, which is the next one on slide 10. So the possible answers were the AI theme will ... continue to see strong gains for key AI-related stocks for several more weeks and even months. So only 20, slightly over 20% believing that. The second choice was may have peaked out soon, the AI theme, but I'm not expecting downside drama. So that's the majority. So some sense that, yes, things have gone a bit wild here, but that is not necessarily going to mean we're in danger of some significant retreat in the current AI. Well, bubble or AI.
We have a very rally. Balanced. We have a very balanced listeners. I would
yeah,
say.
That's a very sort of sort of steady view on things. And then the a good third. So still, I would say pretty high. Good, given the answer, the third choice was the AI theme will end in tears from these levels for most of the prominent AI names. It's an obvious bubble, 32%. So that's a pretty high percentage, I would say, of such a bearish answer. So again, maybe on the margin. Quite bearish. And I think our position would be the end in tears, Peter, but I guess maybe the question would be from what level or what are your thoughts?
Well, when we talk about it, it will end in tears. I don't think it will end in tears in actual numbers, revenue and profits for these companies. I don't think that's the case. So when we talk about ending in tears, it's more that expectations are set so high, which cannot be realized from these companies, and then you have a reset of the share price. So that's what we mean when we talk about right. because there will be positive economic gains from this technology, of course.
And I think probably a sub question to that 30% is basically: did you miss the rally, and do you want to buy in on a pullback? Because obviously, some of that could also be a reflection of investors just being frustrated that they didn't get involved.
Yeah, they missed the boat.
I think there's a lot of fear of missing out.
Yeah, so FOMO, classic FOMO,
which obviously could reduce a retracement.
Yeah. Of course. And then I think the next one, I like this. I think we'll do this in the future to help us identify what deep dive podcasts we should bring to the Saxo Market Call. So a few choices, just to give you some specific choices on things you'd like for us to concentrate on for maybe a deeper discussion on one of our podcasts. And there were 5 choices. We asked people to rank these. And the highest ranking, Peter, here in the spotlight, is how Peter assesses the valuation of a single company. So 31% putting that as their top choice, 23% putting it as their second choice. The volatility, how will the VIX go to 10 or 20? A bit less interesting on average. And then I found that it was interesting that the personal trading and or investing stories from the team ranked not so high on the first choice, but it was quite high on the second and third choice. So we'll have to deliver a few of those. I'm suspecting I might force you guys to record a few things with me, and I'll do likewise, that we put out maybe a little series while we're all away on summer vacation. So we have something to entertain our listeners if they care to be entertained with those for some special edition podcasts this summer. Apparently not a lot of interest in hearing me talk about charts and technicals and FX. And then the second most popular topic, Ole, you're on the firing line here, Europe's energy outlook, crisis averted or will it return? I think that'll be an interesting discussion to have with you on a deep dive, maybe some perspectives on where we're headed for Europe specifically.
I like that one. Personally. Super interesting, interesting topic, and also the news flow coming out of Germany with their economy, the penalizing high energy prices, completely reshaping their chemical and heavy energy intensive industry. You sense a feeling of crisis moment in Berlin, not to the same degree in other European countries. So this is very a German specific an issue. But so Ole, if I can help with some perspective as well from the equity side, I think it could be a cool topic to discuss.
You most certainly can.
All right, now let's go to the macro slide here, and there is a huge week ahead. This is this does not end with this week. Look at this passel of central banks out there reporting. Slide 12, we got the S&P. They're expected actually to hike again by a quarter percent. Norges Bank, likewise, expecting a hike, and Bank of England also expecting a hike. So this again, this whole tendency towards further tightening expected to re-engage. We also have the Turkish central bank up next week. I've not put it on the slide here. I believe it was also Thursday. I will put it on the final slide that you're seeing. They are expected to hike, get this, hold on to your seats, 13% from a policy rate that was only a fictional policy rate. Anyway, of something like 8.5%, I believe it was, to over 20%. That's the sort of the median expectation. Up today, we do have the University of Michigan sentiment, by the way. And if, it's only, I think, newsworthy if the inflation expectations component of that is suddenly out of range again. That could really jolt this market the wrong way after the dip in yields yesterday. But then going back to next week, we have the UK May CPI really critical after the recent ramp in UK rates on some other hot data. Fed Chair Powell doing a testimony before the House and Senate on Wednesday and Thursday. And then on Friday, we have Japan's CPI figure, which is going to be really critical because we're heading into those late July, or that late July Bank of Japan meeting and what it's going to bring in terms of a possible tweak in policy, given that they issue new forecasts then. So that was a wrap for today. A very interesting week ahead as well. And next Friday, don't worry, we have lots of answers in the Saxo Market Call listener survey. We are going to wrap up some of those and address some specific questions, hopefully next Friday. But in any case, do look for that in the coming week. And yeah, that's a wrap. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.